Episode 216.
Today's consumer is far too informed. They know too much. They've seen that movie before, so they're not gonna go down that route. So you have to focus in on the customers that are willing to engage you in trade and say, look, I need my car to last. I understand it's expensive, but if you keep your promises and what your brand stands for, I will pay for that. Time is the new world currency.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to On Point from Remarkable Results Radio, and a special interview from an auto care industry professional. On Point. Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriato here, and thank you for listening to the premier aftermarket podcast, Remarkable Results Radio. And welcome to episode 216 with Dennis McCarron, the Executive Director of Dealer Strategic Planning. By the way, there is more on Dennis McCarron on his very own episodes page at remarkableresults.biz/E216. And there you'll see additional bio information and the episode talking points. This episode is made possible through the sponsorship of Federal Mogul Motor Parts, and thank you for supporting their brands. You can search for parts, get the latest technical updates, and sign up for their new Garage Rewards loyalty program at their all-new website, fmmotorparts.com. You know, I'm privileged. Every time I sit behind the mic, I'm excited and engaged over every interview because there's always something to learn from each interview. This episode is no exception. You trust me to bring you quality content, and I work very hard to deliver on those expectations every week. Hey, thanks to my newest Facebook friends, Ralph and Tammy Donovan, Brian Wilkinson, Brian Gossel, and Bruce Weiss, and to my new LinkedIn connections, Darren Williams, Sheila Stevens, and Matthew Shanahan. Now, don't hesitate to come on board to my LinkedIn or Facebook pages. Love to have you. And I'm also on Twitter and Instagram. You can find instant access to all my social accounts at remarkableresults.biz/social. Hey, just one more thing. Become an email insider and subscribe to be in the know on every episode. All you've got to do is text the word REMARKABLE to 33444. That's REMARKABLE to 33444. Follow the prompts and you become an insider. Now meet Dennis McCarron. He is the Executive Director of Dealer Strategic Planning, a 20-group organization. Dennis formerly was a Bridgestone National Management Instructor, and he joined DSP 20 Group in 2014 as a group facilitator, and he is now Executive Director. His experience includes 8 years managing retail stores for Bridgestone and 10 years designing, instructing, and facilitating Bridgestone's management courses. At DSP, Dennis and his team help independent aftermarket dealers manage the financial, branding, and human resource aspects of running a business. Dennis came on the show to discuss three topics. Now, they are payroll, the killer of companies, the talent gap, why now is so critical, and stop with the millennial nonsense. We covered these topics in depth, along with even more great insights from an industry leader who says time is the new currency. Besides managing payroll, the talent gap, and embracing millennials, we talked about peer accountability, the typical makeup of a 20 group, cash reserves, and why you need a peer network, along with his background in behavior analysis. Now, don't shy away from the tough subjects in this episode. It has impact and may just help you cross the line. Now, here we go with Dennis McCarron. A warm welcome to Dennis McCarron, the Executive Director of Dealer Strategic Planning. Welcome, Dennis, to the podcast.
Thanks, Carm. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you know, it's great to have you. I was kind of moved by the word dealer strategic planning, and then you and I talked, and I remembered that as a kid in the distribution business, we called all the service professionals dealers. And so your client base is the service professional.
Correct. Particularly the owners of the business.
Right. That's right. Now, as an executive director, what are your major responsibilities?
My major responsibilities are the day-to-day operations of this company. So that falls under planning and organizing the meetings, assisting the dealers in any issues that come up on any given basis, from help me with an HR issue to value my company to how do I have a conversation with this employee about this situation. Recruiting is a big thing. We are constantly out looking for new dealers to come into the fold. and just getting the word out there that we exist. And if people want to come and check us out, it's a free date. And that's what we do.
When you and I had our pre-call, you mentioned a person's name, Norm Gaithier. And as a young man in this industry, I remember either reading a book, reading articles, or knowing of Norm or being at a seminar of his. Give me his background.
Norm started out in the parts business. He was an accountant for a large parts company in the Baltimore area. And during that time, he would help one-on-one different dealers. And they would come to him with questions, and he started to evolve a consulting business because he had direct contact with people that were buying parts. And he came upon the idea of a 20 group for the automotive new car dealers. And that's where the idea originated in the late 20s, was in car dealers. And he thought, well, this is a great idea. We should have one for the aftermarket. So he started the very first 20 group in the aftermarket automotive tire and repair, and that was in 2007. And he just felt that it was a better way to get the word out to more people than one-on-one consultation. Puts us in a unique position where we're here to help dealers make money. And the average aftermarket shop makes between 2 and 3% return on sales.
Yeah, I hear sometimes 4 or 5, but it's still in the single digits. You're right.
Yeah, I've seen some studies show 4 and 5. The difference that I've found is those surveys are usually asking directly, and they're not having any evidence backed
up.
There's
no auditing. I get it.
The numbers I've seen have been backed up. And
so wait a minute. Are you saying how tall am I? And I always add. How heavy am I? I always subtract.
Yeah, that's right.
It's human nature, isn't it? Too. All right.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, the bottom, we could come to a middle and say, let's call it 3 to 4%. And it's not fair.
It's awfully low for the amount of work, the amount of investment, the technical challenges that exist today. And I know I've had coaches on that said, well, if you're only making that kind of money, you really just have a job and it's a hobby.
You work for the employees, and those guys are right too. Why take all the risk in running a business when your return is nothing more than a regular person's salary? And if you could make more money sticking it in a bank account or in the stock market and not have to deal with the HR headaches, the workers' compensation, the risk of affecting other people's lives, then why not just play the stock market?
Well, you make a lot of sense. Now, the word leap comes to mind. Leap. How many service professionals, dealers that you see come into your program that are in that, 3 to 4 zone, make the leap into a double-digit net profit?
That's a good question. Over half. Our guys, our 100-some dealers, they average 8.
Okay.
So that puts guys above 10, and some guys, we have new members that are just guest starting out. But it does, leap is a good word. It's a total leap of faith to come in and say, I'm struggling, nothing's working, what do I do? And then instead of a consultant telling you this is what you need to do, you have your peers, people that are in the exact same shoes as you, say, I've been in your position. I've thought that I couldn't raise my labor rate. I thought that I couldn't fire that guy that should have been fired 5 years ago. I thought that I'd never get out of it, but I did it. And these are the things I did. And then you have 18 other guys in that group that say, yep, I thought the same thing for 5 years. And man, if I could go back in time and do this earlier, I would have done it.
Okay. Inside of a 20 group, peer-to-peer accountability, is that just basically the essence of it?
Yeah, that's. I think that's the most influential part of it. When you're a small business owner in any industry, you're on an island. There's nobody to tell you what to do because you're the boss, you're the queen or king. And there's nobody to ask questions of. The people that are in your circle of friends, either don't know what it's like to be in a small business, or they're a direct competitor of yours. And you don't want to put out your dirty laundry to a direct competitor. It's just unnatural. So the ability to talk to someone who's exactly in your shoes, but is more than 50 miles away as a competitive threat, you really get to solve problems relatively quickly. And that accountability, there's nothing else in their lives that are holding them accountable besides peer pressure and pride. To come to a meeting and say, I succeeded or I did this, that's a very powerful motivator.
How many members of a 20 group love that accountability discipline amongst their peers? And really, I think it goes to the question, how many don't like it and leave?
In my old days, when I ran classes for Bridgestone, management classes for Bridgestone, we said there was vacationers, prisoners, and learners. And they had about a third, a third, and a third. And so a good portion of the group is there because it's a break from the daily rigmarole. A good portion of the group is there because they're being told by someone else they have to be there. And the other part of the group is there because they genuinely want to do it. And one of the reasons we give a free ride, you come to a meeting and check it out, is because it's not for everybody. Some people, they don't want to share their numbers. They don't want to tell people that they're failing at a certain part of the business. And I get that. And we're not a good fit. And at the end of the free test drive, if somebody says, you know what, I'm not cool with this, this is intense, then it's a good idea that you not join and we stay friends. And if you change your mind, that's great. We have some people that join and they want to do it, but something's holding them back. I'm not a psychiatrist, so I don't usually get into what that is.
But something deep inside is preventing them from actually crossing the line.
It is.
And is it ego? The ability to, you know, just say, hey, listen, good leadership takes accountability, meaning I goofed, I made a mistake, I have more to learn. And one of the coaches that I've interviewed a while back said, as soon as the service professional puts their ego on the shelf, they blossom. Agree with that?
Yeah, I don't think there's one answer. That's definitely one of the answers.
Okay.
Sometimes it's just really personal. I would say leadership skills, the ability to admit that you're wrong, is one of the most powerful statements somebody can say. And we have had on occasion somebody join, and then 3 months into it, they'll come up and say, you know, I'm still at 4%. And we say, well, have you raised your labor rate? Have you changed pay plans? Have you, you know, bought smarter? Well, I can't do that in my market. Okay, well, what have you changed since you started with the group? Well, I can't do any of those things.
I believe you would agree that being a top tech is real hard work. Keeping up is a full-time gig, considering vehicle technology, repair procedures, and diagnostics. It's refreshing to know that Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Guru is there for you. It's been designed by and for technicians, the best in the industry. And did you know there's no other comprehensive program like this anywhere? A big part of the program is the nationwide network of Guru's on-site training and technology centers. There, you can get your hands dirty with the equipment and tools you use every day in real work-related situations. When online is your perfect way to learn, do it with Guru's 24/7 online academy with a huge catalog of training course options. And with the Guru's on-the-go technology fleet, they bring the latest products and demos right to your shop. And this year, you get free stuff from the Garage Rewards Loyalty Program. You earn points towards gear from your favorite Federal Mogul Motor Parts' brands. And what is really great, it costs nothing to join, and you'll start earning points immediately. So head on over to fmgarageGurus.com and learn all about Garage Gurus training, support, and get in on the rewards. You've always counted on Moog to keep you ahead of the pack when it comes to chassis innovation. Well, they've done it again. Most recently launched is the Moog ball joint with a pre-installed integral dust boot. It's designed exclusively for compression-loaded suspension systems, providing superior strength and durability for these types of vehicle applications. The dust boot is made from higher strength materials and comes pre-installed, saving you time because it's easier to install. It also has a larger contact area against the stud, which makes a more effective seal. For your customers, the unit uses Moog's powdered metal gusher bearing that provides longer life and controlled radial and axial movement. You get the industry's leading coverage of 10,000 SKUs, including 4,600 for foreign applications. Hey, you've been installing Moog confidently for years, and now you know why. This is Pure 20 Group stuff that you're talking about. You don't provide coaching services to specific needs, do you?
I do. I take a lot of phone calls.
Okay.
And I do one-on-one coaching. I also do a workshop that's separate from the 20 group, and it's a charge, and it's a leadership class. My background is in behavior analysis and business communication.
Oh, you'd be
and
good, yeah.
We take the conversation of a sale, and we break it down to its psychological components and how each step is a small commitment on each side. And the salesperson has to make a commitment, and the customer has to make a commitment. And if they walk together, they reach an agreeable position to where the sale moves forward. When the salesperson gets ahead of the customer or the salesperson gets behind the customer, that's where you have friction. And we take that exact same conversation and how to teach that to other people. And we flip it around and say, this is the exact same conversation you have with your employees. And we talk about monitoring where somebody is and letting them get their side of the story before you give your side of the story. And then the certain life skills that you teach in the class on how to handle difficult conversations. And that's the HR side of things is about 50% of the conversations I have.
I am not surprised. And speaking of HR, there were three talking points that we kind of outlined for today. One of them was payroll. Yeah. Talent gap, yeah. And stop with the millennial nonsense. I love that talking point. Let's dive into payroll, the killer of companies.
Yes. Most owners in the industry love working on cars or they love selling stuff. And they didn't like taking orders from somebody else, so they got the guts up to start their own business. And managing payroll is by far historically the most difficult thing owners have to do. When the going is good and there's 50 customers a day and every customer says yes, and you just at 7 o'clock in the morning, you put your cup of coffee down on the counter and it's 7 o'clock at night and that cup of coffee hasn't been touched. Everybody's loving it. The techs are making money. The salespeople are commissioning left and right. The owner's bankrolling everything. And then something happens, the economy, the weather, personal issues, somebody quits, they take a job somewhere else. Something happens, disrupts the business, and everyone takes a deep breath and says, I'm going to ride this out. I'm not going to make any changes to my business because the business will bounce back.
I've heard that. I'm going to ride it out. That is just a great quote. I love that, Dennis. I'm going to ride it out. And we've learned over time, once you become the CEO of your business, that's not a good thing.
You know, people say, we can tend to be hatchet men. And I always tell people, the very last thing I want to do is let somebody go.
Right.
That's your last option. But you got to have a countermeasure when the business isn't there. Whether it's charge more or reevaluate compensation programs, it's a give and take. But to sit there and just hold your breath and ride out the slump is procrastination is not at the top of the list of leadership skills.
I love what you just said, countermeasure. Give me some ideas.
Raise your labor rate. That's probably the easiest thing any owner can do. Most of them want to have the best employees and be the best price in the neighborhood. That's a bad combination. If you are the best, you should charge for the best. Most of them are very below market rate in what they charge for labor. You can raise your prices on parts or raise the focus of parts, the smaller the parts, the more margin you can get, and the easier that job is, less chance of a comeback.
Yeah, a good grid, a good margin grid. Yep.
Yep. And you can also reevaluate your pay plans. Most people don't realize that, you know, every year you sit down with an employee and you discuss whether or not they're going to get a raise. Hopefully you do. You can also sit down and discuss a pay decrease. It's not against the law to do an evaluation and offer somebody a pay decrease. And I don't just mean take somebody who makes 50 grand a year and say, I can only afford to pay you 40, but you can say, I'm going to pay you base 40. And if the business rebounds or if you hustle, you'll be able to stay at 50. So there's a lot of different ways to countermeasure a drop in business.
You're talking big, major economic influences in our economy, like a 9/11, 2008 recession. You're not talking about it's Easter break, people are away, so we're going to have a slow couple of weeks.
Correct. Yeah. If you know historically, let's say Easter is the slowest time, then you should automatically be taking countermeasures like no overtime. You should make sure that you're just simply staffed appropriately. What we find is a lot of guys want to be overstaffed just in case.
So what you're really saying is, listen, when we have another one of these incredible shifts in our economy, riding it out, heck, it was at least a 5-year ride out in the last recession, and people are saying we're still in some throes of it. It really helps you, and tell me if I'm right or wrong here, Dennis, it really helps you to have those great disciplines back then. If you were a member of a 20 group and you were going through it with your peers from around the country, then you can all take each other's best ideas and then share what works and what didn't work. And wow, what a great way to reinvent your business by saying, I really need to take a look at my labor rate. I really need to take a look at my parts margin. I really need to take a look at all my costs.
Well, let me paint a picture, but what we find is without any sort of discipline, most people are getting their P&L 60, 75 days after the month is over, and, yeah, and that's too far. But let's paint a picture of the average dealer. Let's say they're at 4% net profit. And let's say lean times come in and their payroll goes from 50% to 60 or 62. That business isn't making any money. But now they're flat or digging into the cash reserves to stay afloat. Let's say a workers' comp claim hits at that point. What happens is we're not making enough money in the normal times to be able to weather a slow time or a workers' comp claim. So if I get somebody who's making 10% or let's say 12 to 13%, and they tell me, look, I want to run rich in my employees. I'm okay paying a little more. And they have an extra guy on hand to cover the busy 2 hours in the day where they can get an extra job. If you're banking 12%, I'm okay with that. I still think you should manage a little better and get up to 15%. But you're healthy enough to survive a storm. If you're at 3% and you want to have an extra guy just in case, you're flirting with bankruptcy.
Yeah, you just said cash flow. That will be an anomaly with anyone making 3 or 4% with the money that needs to be reinvested in the business.
Exactly.
You know, even a normal citizen of our country doesn't have enough money to hold them if they lost their job for a few months. And yeah, you bring up such a great point about cash reserves and even cash flow. We talked about that on one of the shows, and I think I promised to have an entire show on cash flow one day. Great information, and I appreciate that on payroll. Now, what about the talent gap?
In the mid-90s, and I promise you our discussion will not get political, but it will touch on government. In the mid-90s, the federal government made a decision that they were going to focus our youth on a college education, and they were going to push everybody towards getting a degree, because if we're going to shift from a manufacturing economy to a service-based economy, that's what needs to happen. And they did a remarkable job in pushing everybody into college. they ran the schools and they ran the loan programs to get people to pay for it. So the schools made a lot of money because enrollment blossomed and the kids took on a lot of debt. And you have a lot of people out there with a marketing degree that can't find a job. And they have $150,000 in debt. And you have hundreds of thousands of jobs out there going unfilled as bricklayers, plumbers, landscapers, automotive technicians, mechanics, airline mechanics, jobs that don't require a four-year degree.
Our skilled tradesmen.
Skilled tradesmen of all shapes, colors, and sizes, yeah. As a very broad term.
Sure.
But particularly automotive, because it's a dirty job. So you have this giant push. So now you have people that could have been very talented in working with their hands and their minds, working on cars, which are getting, you need to understand engineering, electricity. I mean, you need to know so much to work on a car today. But you have somebody that could have been very good with their hands and their mind, and they got pushed into college, and maybe they floundered for a little while, and they ended up with a degree, and maybe they have a job, but they're not as happy as they would have been had there been a shop class, or had there been a summer job where they went and were a tire buster for the summer to make money. It was the unintended consequence of pushing a four-year degree on the entire nation of children.
We had to be ahead of the world in science, in medicine, in technology, and you're right. I don't know what age group you're from, but I'm from the age group where I had I didn't have to. I guess I really did enjoy going to print shop and going to a wood shop and going to metal shop. And, you know, I guess that's why I could pick up the end of a hammer today and know which end actually does all the work.
I went to college. I have a bachelor's and a master's degree. College has served me well. I did those physical labor jobs while I was going to college. I laid ceramic tile. I was a janitor.
Well, wait a minute. Stop me for a minute. I'm happy to hear that. But the reason you did is because those jobs weren't beneath you. They were available like they are today, but they weren't beneath you.
Exactly. They were, and I worked for a ceramic tile guy. His name was Frank. And he taught me how to tear down a bathroom, and he was meticulous, and he made a ton of money. And I thought, this is great. I may want to do this. And then in August, when it was 100 degrees out, I had to carry 5-pound buckets of cement up 3 flights of stairs, and I decided this isn't for me. And I worked, I worked in a shop, and I did oil changes and busted tires, and I can work on my own car, but I'm not gifted enough to do that for a living. I can't, just because you're good at doing it doesn't mean you're good at making money doing
it. Oh, absolutely.
And I couldn't work the efficiency side of being a technician. So, I got into the sales and the management, and it felt good to me, and I could apply stuff I learned at college, and my career's turned out okay.
Okay. From your perspective, what do we do about it?
It's too late now. We have to ride it out. There's going to be a talent war. We're going to be overpaying people to do it. There's that unknown factor that we're not going to know what happens until it happens. There's like an app, like maybe highly skilled technicians start to become independent contractors. And instead of going to one shop, they fill their schedule up. I don't know what's going to play out. I can tell you the phone is going to be involved. there's going to be virtual reality is going to be involved.
It sure is.
It's some version of Identifix or other companies like them are going to have a major play in this. But there is not enough people with the know-how to work on cars working on cars.
It almost may spring enough cottage industries, like you say, in the app world I did a great interview with Derek Kaufman, and he talked all about VR, virtual reality, and where he and the Schwartz Associates see it going. And I would, and I'm not sure when it's going to be released, but I encourage everyone to please keep an eye out on the podcast episode listing for Derek Kaufman. It is a, it's a great episode, and you bring up such a great point as to how are we going to deal with the base talent pool that we have.
Yeah, so that's the unknown side of it. The known side is that businesses, in the meantime, are going to have to pay higher because that's supply and demand. And they're also going to have to take on the responsibility of more in-depth training. And that's another expense to the company that the company will have to pass on to the consumer. It's to the point now where companies, they're not only having to train employees on how to do the job, they're having to send kids to English as a second language courses and math courses. And, you know, Johnny is graduating high school and he can't read his diploma. So businesses are having to, especially small businesses, are having to take on that responsibility, whether it's informal training, formal training, or non-formal training. They're required to take on that burden.
Do you see the effect that Mike Rowe is going to have in leading a charge with the plumbers and the carpenters and the electricians and the auto mechanics to get to the parents and say, listen, you may not know this, but you're not going to be able to get something repaired, you know, run a wire, drive your car if we don't bring our skilled trades back. Is that grassroots effort going to have an impact in the next 10 to 15 years?
I think he's already had an impact. The Micro Works is a great organization, and we handed out, he has a pledge that I think is just fantastic. But the issue is the job has lost its appeal. And the first way that's going to get back is when wages increase. And when somebody can make, let's say, 120 grand with a smaller investment in tools than they would in a college degree, that's when people are going to start to say it's not so bad. And you've already seen the small business owners, they don't run a garage anymore. They run a small retail location and it's as clean as a bank, at least in the showroom. We're still working on the shop.
Dennis, when you're sitting in front of your 20 group or you're involved in whatever the agendas are going to be, say today's journey is talking about a 20% net profit. The shop's capability to pay for the techs you just mentioned a little while ago is there if the net profits are big and strong. And I guess you could hover and survive around the threes and the fives and accept what you got, or you can really make that leap, learn all that you can, make the important and critical changes, find yourself the accountability partner to hold you to the fire to get these things done, grow your net profit to the place it needs to be so that you can earn an honest CEO's living for all that you have done and invested, and be able to command the best technicians because you have the money to pay them. I mean, there's the formula.
Right. If you're at 2 and 3%, you're not going to survive the next 10 years. It's going to get too costly. And it's going to take a change in mindset. 20 years ago, it was get as many people through the front door as possible, hit them over the head with as much as you can, see what shakes out. Today's consumer is far too informed. They know too much. They've seen that movie before, so they're not gonna go down that route. So you have to focus in on the customers that are willing to engage you in trade and say, "Look, I need my car to last. I understand it's expensive, but if you keep your promises and what your brand stands for, I will pay for that." And people. Time is the new world currency. And if I can set up an appointment with you and you tell me at 3 o'clock my car is going to get right in, I'm going to get an oil change and an inspection. I'm okay that you're going to tell me if I have a bulb out or I need a filter. But if I'm going to be done by 325 and I'm actually being handed my keys at 325, I'm going to pay $75 for that oil change, whereas the one that's advertised for $35 down the street, where I have to bring in and it's first come, first serve, and I got to sit down on a shaky internet and play with my phone for 45 minutes before my car even comes in, forget that. I can't even stand in line at Costco anymore for more than 5 minutes.
What do you start shaking?
Yeah, I'm looking at it. I see 7 empty cash registers. And I'm like, why am I standing here in line?
And you're saying, here, I'm an operations guy. Why aren't they just moving people around? Why aren't they bringing someone in to keep the line no more than 3 or 4? I'm like that. All these things go through my head, and I'm saying, why is this operationally so weak?
Yeah, and I don't mean to bash Costco. My Costco is actually pretty good. I do see them. They have a floor manager, and she's pretty good at opening up registers.
Yeah.
It just as an example.
I hear you. Yeah. Well, hey, thanks for that enlightening discussion on the talent gap. You're hitting home with a lot of great subjects. Now, we were also going to talk about the millennial nonsense that we continue to hear all the time. You know, are we selling them? Aren't we? I mean, I know 2 or 3 years ago, people were going to seminars to learn how to sell them. And now there's seminars to say, accept it and move on because there's new generation, what? Z
and I, depending on who you talk to. Yeah. I study generational differences. I keep up on the actual academic rigorous studies that have value. The pop stuff really doesn't. It perpetuates the same myths.
What do you mean over the pop stuff?
The stuff you see in like Time Magazine or Newsweek or consumer-driven articles, the research articles, the journals of American Science,
okay.
And those are the actual studies, and they're faulty too. So by the time it leaks out to a reporter who's just trying to meet a deadline, they end up with, you know, millennials or the trophy generation, and you need to soft sell them. It's just they Googled it and wrote a story on it. Here are the facts. This is the millennial generation is the first generation that was studied when they were in single digit age. Who is the same person they were when they were 9 years old? You know, all the other studies were done. The greatest generation, the boomers, they were all done when they were at least in their late teens and adults. So we had this perception built on the millennials when they were kids. And every generation has an event that changes them. Boomers had Vietnam. Boomers had Man on the Moon. Boomers had JFK, MLK, RFK. They had a lot of events. Gen Xers had AIDS epidemic. They had the Challenger shuttle explosion and Reagan's speech. That was massive for that generation. And millennials had 9/11. And everybody had made up their mind about what millennials were going to be like before 9/11. And most of those kids were still in grade school. Fast forward to millennials are now the largest group of people in the working class. Many of them have been over in the Middle East for the last 12 years with 120 pounds of equipment on their back in 100 degree heat. And all they've known their whole adult life is combat. And you're going to tell me this is the trophy generation? I just don't buy it. And on top of that, if you're going to blame anybody for everyone gets a trophy, blame the boomers and the Xers, because they were the adults making the decision that everybody gets a trophy.
Yeah, we gave the trophies out. I know. I have a great story to tell you. I was coaching roller hockey for my son, and we worked so hard to qualify. We didn't win the first place. Went to, and this was my first understanding of this trophy, Jen. And I walked into the party, the end of the season party, and I saw like 150 trophies on a table. And I was only looking to probably see, you know, a dozen for, you know, first, second, and third. And everybody got a trophy. And I walked around to the parents and I said, is this right? It was my first hit upside the head that everybody got a participation trophy. And I wasn't too keen on that because I remember when I was a young man, you finished, you got a trophy. You didn't finish. It taught you play harder next time, get smarter.
So the psychology is what the boomers and the Xers as parents did is they tried to shield certain children. And what that did is it delayed the psychological development of some kids. So you do have a pocket of kids, a large pocket, who as a 24-year-old kid in their first sales job is being told for the first time in their life, you suck. They're having a psychological moment. If this is the first time they're being told you're not getting an award, you're bad at this, or your assessment is poor, or I'm downgrading you, they're psychologically 5 years old. Because that's when you should be told you're not good at something or you failed at something. So these kids are having these rather odd reactions, but that's because of this delayed approach to shielding them. But there's no way you can say every millennial is going to go through that experience because it's just not that broad. It's like saying every boomer was a hippie turned into a self-made millionaire. It's just not true.
This is true. Very interesting insights from your perspective. And because you study this, this is big in your world. You want to know all about the millennials?
I do. So I want to be able to separate fact from fiction. And you do handle millennials different than you handle Gen Xers. Then you handle boomers, and there really isn't anybody from the greatest generation still working. But there is a way you approach a millennial in general, and then you have to fine tune to who that actual person is. You don't hire a millennial, you hire a person. And yes, if I'm talking to a millennial about what coming in and working for me, I'll start off with the general. I have flexibility of hours. I provide this. You know, I'm going to hit them. And if they appeal to that, I'll run with it. But there are plenty of millennials that they don't want the flexibility. They want the rough schedule. They want to advance quickly. They want to put the hard work in because that's what their cousins did. And that's what their father did. And that's what their aunt did. And their aunt, you know, is a small business owner and she taught them early on. So you can start with a generalization, but it can't stay there. There are just people are people.
So in our remaining moments, let's just do a little role play. I'm a shop owner. I'm struggling in selling millennials. I pick up the phone and I say, hey, Dennis, it's Carm. Give me some advice on how I can really engage the millennials better in my shop.
In your shop, to start with, it must be clean, neat, organized. It has to be technology forward. You have to know how to send a text message picture of what a broken tie rod end is. You have to have the hours of operation that are convenient. You have to have multiple ways for them to pay. I'm not saying you have to accept Bitcoin. But you better be able to, you know, do the phone.
Yeah. Can I wave my phone over your, yeah.
You have to show that you have an interest in who I am as a customer, regardless of my generation. You know, the old days of a dirty coffee station and Jerry Springer on the TV, you know, that's, you just show as an owner, you're not interested in keeping up with me as a customer.
Yeah. Great advice. Great advice. Dennis, you seem to be an all-around, all-purpose, all-knowledge kind of guy.
I try. I've had a very blessed career with a lot of good mentors that have helped me along the way. And I just try to pay that forward.
Well, look, thanks for being on. We talked payroll, talent gap. We talked millennials. We talked a lot of stuff. Profits and, you know, how the 20 groups work and interact. Any great wise words to that you live by or you'd love to share?
Yes. Pay it forward. Be a good person. It's not a bad thing to make a profit as long as that value equation is there And I'll speak directly to the business owners out there. You don't have to join my 20 group, but I am telling you, you need a peer network. Go and do something.
Right on. I continue to hear that message, and we'll continue to push that message out until everyone finds themselves at a new, higher, better level. Wow. Dennis McCarron, Executive Director, Dealer Strategic Planning. Thanks for being here, man.
You got it, Carm. Thanks for having me.
Hey, aftermarketers, thanks for joining us. Dennis McCarron did provide a wealth of information and powerful nuggets of wisdom for you to chew on. So will you make changes because of Dennis's wisdom? Did you appreciate most of his talking points? Will you do anything about them in your business? Is accountability missing in your personal disciplines? Well, the power of the podcast brings concepts, ideas, and insights to the world of the aftermarket, and I'm satisfied if you use the wisdom found inside to propel you to improved results. Create your own action plan and start. Now, there's more on Dennis McCarron on his very own episode page at remarkableresults.biz/E216. Hey, don't forget to reach out to me. Your feedback and comments on this interview or all previous 215 interviews is so appreciated. To keep in touch with me at Carm, that's C-A-R-M, at remarkableresults.biz. Hey, thanks for your support and listenership. It is very important to me that you help spread the word of this expansive library of aftermarket wisdom. Having engaged and loyal listeners is the fuel for my fire. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.